Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. You know, Wall Street has a long-standing reputation of being mostly a boys' club. Our next guest, Sally Krawcheck, knows that firsthand. She rose to power as the CEO of Smith Barney, then CEO of Merrill Lynch, and then CFO of Citigroup. And she's used to being the only woman in the room. But she's trying to change all that. Now she's the CEO of Elevest, a digital investment platform designed to help women reach their financial goals. And she's got a new book, Own It, The Power of Women at Work, where she offers a new set of rules for women to be successful in the workplace. She writes, "We women are on the brink of extraordinary rise. The future is ours to seize." She was also seizing it in part by attending the Women's March on Washington last weekend. Sally Krawcheck, welcome to WNYC.
Brian, I'm so glad to be here with you. I'm the only woman in this room.
You are the only woman out of the two people in this room. But at least that's 50% representation, which is the same as in the population.
There we go.
But it always seems like books are coming out saying, "We women are on the brink of extraordinary rise." And then the brink never comes.
That, fair enough. And in fact, the book really starts with, weren't we supposed to be here already? Weren't we supposed to have arrived? With all the discussion around women in business, it just felt like we had momentum. But we've stalled in corporate America, despite the fact that when you have gender-diverse leadership teams, the companies perform better, and not by a little bit, by quite a bit. But we've stalled in some industries where you might think more women would be helpful, like Wall Street. We've gone backwards.
Why backwards on Wall Street, and how much?
Well, it's not atypical for an industry that goes through a crisis to become less diverse on the other side, the circling of wagons. I saw it not in a, oh, let's get rid of people of difference, but more, hey, things are so tough, I need someone I can trust. And the person I can trust looks just like me. And that's just human nature. But, you know, the industry went into the downturn white male and middle-aged and came out whiter, maler, and middle-ageder. I love white middle-aged males. I always say I've been married to a couple of them. But there's a lot of research. The opposite of the research of how women help businesses is when you have homogenous groups, they tend to, and it's been shown in capital markets, they tend to trust each other too much, misprice the markets. A lot of testosterone is a lot of risk-taking, and in this case, poor risk-taking, and it really almost brought the economy down.
So why have you been the exception? I mean, you've been CEO of Merrill Lynch, CFO of Citigroup.
Yeah, a lot of hard work, but a lot of doing things my own way, which has been good for me and bad for me. So when I ran Sanford Bernstein, which was a research business, I took us out of investment banking. We were doing research, so we were working for one client. The investment banking business was a conflict of interest. It had you work for another client in direct opposition. I took us out. Elliot Spitzer came in, found out the industry had these conflicts. We ended up as the biggest business out of it, and my career soared for having this very contrarian position. And I attribute that in part because I was so different. On the other hand, I got fired. When I was running Smith Barney, I was the only executive on Wall Street, to the best of my knowledge, to return client funds because we'd messed up. And I got fired for it. Managed to do it, but I got fired for it. And so the argument I make in the book is these points of difference. Maybe I was right and maybe I was wrong, but wouldn't we want Wall Street to have had more of these debates as opposed to fewer?
And you describe in the book the aha moment that was triggered for you by being fired.
Oh, yes. So I've had several of them. But one of them, you know, it's funny, Brian, after I got booted out, people said to me, well, you should start a investing business for women. And I would say, you should jump off of a cliff, because I had been brought up in an environment in which that was a junior varsity thing. It had to be dumbed down, simplified. But step back. The retirement savings crisis in this country is a woman's crisis. We live 5, 6 years, 8 years longer than you men do. We're 80% of nursing home residents. We retire with 2/3 the money of men. If we have a crisis, it's a woman's crisis. We love you, but you're going to be dead, okay? Now, how do you solve it? We typically think tax increases, entitlement cuts. But you know what? If we close the gender pay gap, we close the retirement savings gap by 1/3. If we close the gender investing gap, women don't invest as much as men do, in part because Wall Street is so male. We get to women hundreds of thousands, some women millions of dollars more over the course of their lives, if history is any guide.
So is that what you're working on at your current company? Do you say LVEST?
LVEST. So French, E-L-L-E-V-E-S-T. Yes. So I got over myself and I said, so to back up and get Gloria Steinem on us, we women have plenty of resources. We have $5 trillion of investable assets. We direct 80% of consumer spending. But on an individual basis, we have less money than the men do. Until we are financially equal with you, we will not be equal with you. And that's when I began to think, you know what? Wall Street is failing women. And we're telling them, you know, it's your fault, lady. You know, you're not as good at math. You're not as good an investor, neither of which is true. You need more financial education. Okay, but so do the guys. And as I stepped back and said, it's such a male business. The industry symbol is a bull, phallic symbol, right?
You want it to be a cow?
No, never call a woman a cow. Financial advisors are 86% male and on average about 60 years old. And I said, there's got to be a better way. And so we put together an online platform that the least of it is that it's beautiful. But what it does is it takes into account, as no one else does, that we women live longer, that our salaries emerge differently, that women can take financial breaks. And so we need something different. And we think about investing differently. Not a single one woman told me she wanted to outperform the S&P. Every other woman, and we've spoken to maybe hundreds, thousands at this stage, say, I want to retire well. I want to buy a home. I want a big splurge. We think of it conceptually. We don't think of it as just making more money.
My guest is Sally Krawcheck. Her new book is Own It, The Power of Women at Work. And we can take your phone calls for her at 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. On that point you were just making, you probably saw the New York Times article yesterday about how women are dropping out of the workplace for different reasons than men. Economist Nicholas Eberstadt identified what he called a care chasm as a reason for that happening in the U.S. compared to other industrialized countries, which have better policies to prevent this sort of thing. What do you think of that idea?
I think he's right, and I think it cost us more than we realize. So if I were to say, we do it for babies, we do it for parents, we still are the main caregivers, and we're still the main worriers. We talk about the unpaid labor gap. I wish my husband would wake up in the middle of the night as much as I do, worried that our kids aren't home for the curfew, right? The amount of sleep I've lost versus him is something. But the career break, so let me give you some quick numbers. If a woman's making $85,000 a year, she takes a two-year career break, and I were to say to you, Brian, how much does that cost her? You do the calculation, say $170,000. The number's 1.7 million over the course of her life. Why? Because on average, when she comes back to the workforce, she takes a substantial pay cut. She's not investing in her 401k. Any raise she gets later is off of a lower rate. And so these costs are enormous. Now, perhaps some of your gentlemen listeners are thinking, well, that's a woman's problem, right? But closing these gender gaps helps everybody. I would ask your gentlemen listeners, do you have any women customers, right? Or women clients? You know, do you have daughters? So if we can get
or if
women,
the woman is your wife, that's family income.
That's a good thing, right? Or a sister. I mean, the women doing better, women having more money is a win-win-win-win. Economy, society, families, everybody.
So is this a matter primarily of changing federal policy, changing male attitudes? What's the biggest thing that would bring this about?
Well, it wouldn't hurt to have a mandated parental leave because women really fall out of the workforce when they have those babies. And there is research, new research, that shows that a maternal leave can pay for itself in the first year because women return to work, so you don't have to replace them. You don't have to train their replacement. Here's what I think is going to happen, and here's the optimistic note on the book, which is – we talked about women, the advancement stalling in business. There's a big difference today. It's called technology. It's changing the workplace. It is changing what it takes to be successful in the workplace. In the day, Jack Welch, command and control, I have the information, you don't. Today, we've all got the information. And some of the skills that women bring of risk awareness, holistic decision making, seeing around corners, valuable stuff. If companies don't pay them or value it. When I was younger, I would go in and say, hey, can I have a raise? They'd say no. I'd say, okay. Today, you can go in and say, hey, this is how much I should make. I know because technology has given me payscale.com, get raised, hired, comparably. If they won't, I used to have to go to another company or go home. Little information. Today, I can go to another company. I can look at crowdsourced information about their company culture. I can compare on something like Fairy Godboss, their parental leaves. And then finally, if I don't want to do that, rather than go home, I can start my own thing. The cost of starting businesses is plummeting today. Women are starting businesses at 2x the rate of men. And the main reason for doing it is because they want to build the cultures at which they want to work. And the fourth option is to have a non-traditional career, part-time consulting. So all of a sudden, whereas before it's the company's way or the highway, we women have got a lot more options and are beginning to take advantage of them.
Tanya in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC with Sally Krawcheck. Hi, Tanya.
Hi to both of you guys. I love your show.
Thank you.
Listen, I'm a woman. You know how with the 401k plan, which she was speaking upon, my job contributes 12%. My rationale was, okay, I put 3% towards it to make it an even 15%, but I don't know, should I be contributing a little more? Because I don't know what it is about the 15% registering with me with the 401k plan, but what can I do to help myself? I'm like 42 years old now.
That's great. Good. Well, I love it that you're contributing to it. I love it that your company is contributing it to it for you.
Right.
In my opinion, you should put in as much as you can afford.
Okay.
Because you sound like a woman who's exercising and taking care of herself. And if you're going to live a longer life, you need to plan for that longer life. I like the 401k plan too, but besides the tax deferral,
right,
it comes out of your paycheck. So you don't even know it's going.
Exactly.
And it forces you to invest regularly. So when the market's ups and downs, some markets you'll be investing in will be expensive. Others will be cheap, but you'll get a market-like return over time, which is so much better than leaving it in cash.
Tanya, thank you, and good luck.
Tanya, you rock.
Emily in Newburgh, you're on WNYC. Hi, Emily.
Hi. I was calling about a question that I had having to do with sort of what you think some tactics are for training men or training men in male-dominated workplaces to understand the benefits of having a more diverse workforce, specifically training men to understand the benefits of having a woman who's more inclined, like you said, to bring up sort of the concerns about risk or high-risk environments. I worked as a woman in a male-dominated fabrication company, and I was one of three women probably out of 40.
Right. Mm-hmm. So I love the term you use, train them. I think that's amazing. I talk about, first of all, I give them a copy of the book Own It, because there's all sorts of data and research in the beginning, which I hope is presented in a not boring way, but a pretty fast read about the great things that all kinds of diversity does for businesses, but gender diversity in particular. The other concept that I talk about in the book is the courageous conversation. What conversation are you willing to have at work? I'm willing to write a book about this. Other people are willing to, on a daily basis, say, hey, Peter, do you realize you interrupted Susie in that meeting five times, but you didn't interrupt Joe? Or, hey, Sam, do we realize we just promoted Mike while we called him ambitious and he broke eggs, but we advised, you know, Cynthia to get an executive coach, bring in these topics up. We have to as women. I always hear we got to bring the men in more, where the men need to take a leading role. The truth is I've probably worked with more men than anyone. I've probably interrupted more men having more conversations about stuff than anyone. Never once did I walk into a conference room and say, hey, guys, what are y'all talking about? And they said, hey, Sally, funny at you. We were just talking about the positive impact of gender diversity and driving performance. Never happened. So we've got to bring up these courageous conversations, but I'd give them the book or look in the back of the book for the resources. I'd hand them some pieces of paper, and then I'd have the courage to start these conversations at work. And the worst thing that happens is it doesn't work, and then you go work for someplace else that gets it.
My guest is Sally Krawcheck, who has been CEO of Smith Barney, CEO of Merrill Lynch, CFO of Citigroup. She's currently the CEO of Elevest, and she has a new book called Own It, The Power of Women at Work. And Tim in Westfield, you're on WNYC. Hello, Tim.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
On WNYC, there's been a lot of negative rhetoric about President Trump, but I think I could bring you guys a little bit of positive. During the campaign, President Trump spoke about child care, and so did his daughter, Ivanka. And, we could maybe put the head of crony capitalist Kravchuk and nationalist Trump together and maybe get something going there.
All right. Capitalist. Are you a crony capitalist Kravchuk?
I don't know. It's Kravchuk.
Kravchuk.
I hear you. I know. I was heartened by the fact that he brought that up. I was heartened by the fact that his daughter has brought that up. And we'd all love to see it. I think it would be a really important step.
There was a difference on the campaign trail that was discussed between the Hillary Clinton plan for paid family leave and the Trump plan, that the Trump plan was inferior, as the Democrats saw it, because it was only maternal leave. It wasn't parental leave. So it didn't actually give fathers the incentive to take time off from the workplace, which would generally, be a boon to women's equality, and also was shorter. Do you have an opinion about that?
Well, there's research that indicates that men having these parental leaves as well is good for the families, certainly good for the kids, also good for the women's compensation and earnings as well. It normalizes the idea of family leave as something that we do as people, not that that other group over there, those women, do. The truth is, I'm a pragmatist. If we can get anything, fantastic, because we're the only developed country in the world and only one of two countries in the world that don't have these leaves. I have had babies. It is painful. It takes a while to recover from. And you know, if you're just a human, you want to get that kid off on the right foot. And it's shameful that we don't have that in this country and that something like only 20% of companies have it. I mean, how do you return to work right after that?
Should we go full Sweden and require that men take a percentage of the family leave? Otherwise, the family loses some of it?
I haven't gotten all the way there, but yeah, let's debate it over a glass of wine later.
And you write in the book about how you are back at work just 2 weeks after having a baby.
Mm-hmm.
Do you regret that?
So I had two different experiences. After my son was born, I took off almost 10 or 11 months and was with him and had a very important insight. That was my first.
Okay.
Had a very important insight, which I'm not a great stay-at-home mom. You know, we were well on our way to neurotic baby, right? I was teaching him to crawl, and I thought, this is not good for any of us. So that's when I got over the guilt about the stay-at-home versus work. And with my daughter, I certainly wish I'd had more than 2 weeks. But I was starting a new job. I was new in my career. I wanted to make a great impression. Don't worry, I make it up to her now. We spend a lot of time together. Too much, she thinks.
Wendy in New Canaan. You're on WNYC. Hi, Wendy.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hi, Sally. I have a couple questions for you. One is that, I am a stay-at-home mom to two kids. I've been doing this for over 3 years, and I used to be an interest rate trader on Wall Street, and I was one of 50, the only one in there. And so I think, when you talk about bringing more women into Wall Street, into the industry, particularly on the trading side, a lot of the stuff is Wall Street is as a meritocracy as it gets in some sense. So a lot of the stuff, how far you go is largely dependent on your performance, on your P&L. So when you're talking about bringing in women to close that gender gap, are you proposing that, we're giving people sort of a women bonus, your P&L might not be as high as the next man, but because we want to close the gender gap, we kind of just, ignore the P&L aspect.
So Wendy, is that really right? Because I'll tell you, the businesses that I had responsibility for, the wealth management business, the research businesses, the women didn't have smaller P&Ls than the men did. In fact, we found at the wealth management businesses that our most successful, some good number of our most successful advisors were women. And what I found is that when we stripped out the gendered stuff from it, the I think Joe is great, he's very firm, he's terrific, and we just looked at the numbers, that we ended up promoting far more women and people of color than the management team had recommended to start with. So I often recommend to women, particularly if you're going to be on Wall Street, try to find a job that has got numbers attached to it, because in my experience running these businesses, women do amazingly well.
Okay, that's interesting. That's a little bit different from my experience, yep. But I'm glad to hear that.
Well, then I would argue, by the way, on the trading floor, you and I both know, we know this intuitively, the research strongly indicates it, that if those trading floors on Wall Street had been not as many, and we love them, Caucasian, male, middle-aged traders with the same educational backgrounds, the same training programs, in our mind, we can picture people of color, people of difference, more women. You and I both intuitively know that that downturn would have been less severe than it was. And the research backs this up.
Wendy, thank you for your call. You write about being a queen bee in the office, and you describe being queen beed.
I was never a queen bee.
That's or maybe the topic of being a queen bee. And so you found in your research that women don't have as much of a tendency to support one another as you would think that they might, given history.
Well, and it made economic sense that if you were a woman that had a senior woman at a company that has one woman at the executive table and always has, and you're not ready to give it up, you better not help someone else. There's also research that shows historically that if women have advocated for other women or people of color for people of color, we've had our reputations dinged. This is where we need to have a courageous conversation. And the research shows that it works, that I should say, I want to advocate for Wendy, and the research would show you will dismiss me, but let me tell you why Wendy's the right person. And we women have to fight for more seats at the table. Smart companies are realizing that more seats at the table for people of difference leads to better businesses. We need to fight for it. And if the companies won't give it to us, again, we have the opportunity today to go start our own businesses and go away from those that are, you know, not fully embracing the beauty of difference that the workforce offers.
Couple of things on the news. When you were writing this book, most of the country, most of the world was thinking we were about to have our first female president. Does the fact of Trump's election change the context for your book in any way?
You know, it's interesting. It does. And women, what I am hearing from women again and again and again is, you know what, Sally? We need to do something different. We need to take action. That idea, I start the book with, I don't like the term empowerment. And I never knew why, but empowerment means to be given power. Mm. And this idea that what we're doing is going to work and we're on our way, we have got slammed into a wall, whether it's politics, whether it's business right now. And so women are increasingly saying, what can we do that's different? And some of it is the smaller stuff, the courageous conversation, but some of it's the bigger stuff, which is I'm not going to buy from companies that don't advance women. I'm not going to invest in companies that don't advance women, and I'm going to friggin' not work for companies that don't advance women. I'm going to start my own thing. And so there's more of a sense of energy around this than I really expected.
And as a serial investment bank CEO, what do you think of Dow 20,000?
Who cares? You know, there's a whole big deal. It's 20,000. It's like that's so different from 19,999 or 20,001. So we get caught on these round numbers. It's the Dow. It's not the whole market. You know, look, what it has proven to me yet again is that nobody knows what's going to happen in the markets. Not many people thought Trump would be elected. And if he was, not many people thought the market would go up. And that goes back to what we advocated at Elevest, which is don't try to time the market. Even the best investor on the planet, Warren Buffett, doesn't try to time the market. Invest steadily. Invest in low-cost ETFs, diversified portfolios. You know, don't try to buy and sell. It's a loser's game. Just steady as she goes.
It's not just the Dow. The S&P and the NASDAQ hit records this week. And so do you not look at – I mean, you know, somebody could just buy some Vanguard funds if they weren't going to take any guesses at management. So do you look at what – do you do sort of risk management on what you think Donald Trump is going to mean for investments long term?
Us? Nobody knows the answer to it. So what exactly do you risk manage? That's, again, why you don't invest in the S&P only. You invest in a diversified investment portfolio that includes bonds, which can often move in a different direction than stocks, that includes international exposure, that has some cash in it, that could include some real estate. That's what the beauty of diversification, because you and I both know nobody knows what Donald Trump is going to do. And mm-hmm. so to try to risk manage around that, forget it. And you have a long-term perspective. For most people, their investment portfolio will go out more than the years or time that he will be in office. In general, the economy grows over time. The global economy grows over time. And being an investor has been a winning strategy over time.
Sally Krawcheck is now CEO of Elevest and author of the new book, Own It, The Power of Women at Work. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you for having me. It's been fun.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Stay with us.